Hello and welcome to another episode of Twimmel Talk, the podcast where I interview interesting people doing interesting things in machine learning and artificial intelligence. I'm your host, Sam Charrington. A quick update for our faithful listeners and fans. We recently asked you to help us in our bid to secure our nomination in the People's Choice Podcast Awards. Well, thanks to you, we're a finalist in the Best Technology Podcast category, along with other noteworthy shows like Recode Decode and The Vergecast. The award ceremony will be streamed live on September 30th, which turns out to be International Podcast Day. Keep your fingers crossed for us, and a huge thanks to everyone who voted. You have our utmost gratitude. Today, we're joined by Yi Zhu, a PhD candidate at UC Merced focused on geospatial image analysis. In our conversation, Yi and I discussed his recent paper, What Is It Like Down There? Generating Dense Ground-Level Views and Image Features from Overhead Imagery Using Conditional Generative Adversarial Networks. Yi and I discussed the goals of this research, which is to train effective land use classifiers on proximate or ground-level images, and how he uses conditional GANs along with images sourced from social media to generate artificial ground-level images for this task. We also explore future research directions, such as the use of reversible generative networks, as proposed in the recently released OpenAI GLOW paper, to produce higher resolution images. Enjoy. All right, everyone, I am on the line with Yi Zhu. Yi is a PhD candidate at UC Merced. Yi, welcome to This Week in Machine Learning and AI.
Hi, Sam. Hi, everybody. So thank you for having me. It's really excited to be here.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to digging into your work today. To get us started, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in machine learning?
So actually, my major at first is wireless communication because my undergraduate study was on like signal processing and information theory. But then at the year of 2012, when deep learning first showed its great potential on ImageNet challenge, so I was fascinated by its simplicity and the surprisingly good results. So I started to attend some like Kaggle challenges using deep learning, including the famous dog and cat classification challenge. So although at that time, most of the challenge winners are still using random forest or XGBoost, but later I found myself like attractive to this machine learning field and especially deep learning. So I'm thinking, so why not change a major? So in my understanding, so images are still signals captured by optical sensors. So they're not that different from my previous study. So I switched my major to computer vision and start my PhD study at UC Merced in 2014. So basically, I have two lines of researcher directions right now. One is geospatial image analysis. The other is a video analysis. But I think today I will just focus first on one.
You mentioned that you started competing in Kaggle competitions. What were some of the competitions that you competed in?
So the first one will be the dog and cat challenge. So that's an object like a recognition problem, like a binary thing. And later, I also competed in the challenge of the eye contact of the driver to try to understand if the driver is sleepless or is it a safe driver or something. So that's also like an autonomous driving challenge.
Okay.
And then also for the insurance to see a car's image. And so whether it is like a damaged or not, is this a new car? So how much price should it sell for a second-hand car? So that's for the insurance company. So there are several more, but I cannot remember the details. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. I don't know the last two, the driver eye contact or the insurance one, but the dog and cat one is one that we have gone through. I'm working with a group of folks to kind of go through the Fast AI course, and
Yeah. They
talk about that dog and cats one in there quite extensively. How'd you do in the Kaggle challenges you did?
So firstly, I just tried a linear regression. So that's the most basic model. Like I think most people still use it today for like normal questions. And then I also tried like a random forest and XGBoost. So at that time, so most winners are using those two techniques and then model ensembling to get to the best score they can. But then I also try like deep learning, right? So convolutional neural networks for this image recognition task. And at first, they cannot compete with like a random forest because the images are not that large. So, you know, like a deep learning is a data hungry model, right? So if you have more data and if you have like a clean data, so you can get a very good result. But if you don't have enough data, so you maybe sometimes it doesn't compete with those traditional algorithms. Yeah, that basically is the four algorithms I'm using for Kaggle challenges.
How did you rank in the competitions? Did you rank highly in any of them?
I didn't rank like a top one or top 10 something, but I'm usually in the top 10%.
So. Okay, nice. And so your research now is on understanding images using deep learning, and you recently published a paper. The paper is called What Is It Like Down There? Generating Dense Ground Level Views and Image Features from Overhead Imagery Using Conditional GANs. That there's a ton in there.
Yeah. So the title is quite long.
The title is quite long. I mean, maybe let's get started. I think, you know, we've talked about GANs quite a bit on the podcast, but why don't you start us out by talking about conditional GANs?
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I have seen those like a GANs episode here and there. So it's very hot topic like last year, and the trend is still going on. So as we know, so GAN consists of two components. So one generator, one discriminator. But the thing is, when you generate something, so you're generating from a random noise. So each time you will get different results, different output. But sometimes you really want to have some like fixed output, right? So that is what conditional GAN for. For example, sometimes a shoe designer, they want to design using a GAN to design a new shoe. But if you didn't control the output, sometimes it will begin something really random. So if we can give the model some information, like prior information, like some texture embeddings, like called, I want a shoe. So then the output will definitely be a shoe image. So that's what GAN for. So cGAN, so the conditional GAN, learn the distribution condition on some auxiliary information. So those auxiliary information can be class labels, or which is the most standard form, or text embeddings for generating images, or like image-to-image translation. So here in our work, so we use conditional GAN because we know what we want, right? We want ground-level images corresponding to the like overhead image. So given me an overhead image, I want to generate a similar looking ground level images. So the overhead image will be considered as a prior information. Yeah. So that's why we choose like conditional GAN.
And what you're going for kind of visually is if you send in to the system the image of, you know, what an area that looks like farmland, you want to generate ground level pictures that look like farmland. Similarly, if you're sending in overhead images of an urban setting, you want it to generate urban images.
Yes, exactly.
Tell us about the different data sources that you use to make all this happen.
Okay. So the ground level images, the problem there is they're sparse. So what we can have is satellite images, right? Satellite images is dense, so in everywhere. So it has all the satellite images at every spatial location. So that is our image input source. So the ground truth land cover map is from the LCM dataset. So our study region is a 71 by 71 kilometer region containing like in London. So the geographic images are labeled as urban or rural based. So then we can do a very simple like a binary classification problems. So our input sources are like a lot. So from like Google Maps statistics and a Geograph API and also the satellite images. So those are the three image sources we're using.
The LCM data set, is that your overhead images or are those your ground images?
Those are the overhead images.
Okay.
And the ground level images is from the Geograph. That is a website by some London researchers. So those are for the whole United Kingdom. So the land cover classes are provided on a 1 kilometer grid. So for every grid, they have the user provided ground level images. So So that's pretty accurate. So that is our ground level images. And the LCM is the overhead images. So we have the corresponding relationship to train our models or do some experiments.
And so I realize that what you're doing here with GANs is fundamentally generative. But part of the way the problem is set up sounds like an information retrieval problem. Like you have this overhead image and you have this corpus of ground level images, kind of find the best one. Are those related in any way?
Oh, so there is difference there. So for like an image retrieval problem is, so given me overhead images, I want to find the best matching like ground level images, right? So there is like there's a database of the ground level images. So we try to find the like most matching one. So, but for generate models, it's not where we want some specific image. So we don't want some specific ground level images to corresponding to the overhead image. We want the whole data distribution to fit. So we want the generator to generate some real looking images to fit the data distribution. So we don't care about which images we're generating. We just want it to look realistic for that category. So that's the only difference.
And do you do any kind of information retrieval as part of the solution? In other words, is your GAN conditioned only on the overhead image, or is it conditioned on the subset of images that you retrieve from a database based on the overhead image?
That's a good question. So actually, right now we only based our model on GAN. So we're not using any information retrieval thing. Okay. So, but in the future we want to use that because the land use classification problem is really challenging. It's really really hard. So maybe later I will introduce my another work. So it's also about large scale land use classification, but the classification accuracy is only like 20%, 30%. So it's pretty challenging. So we need to have some like a human prior knowledge inside it. So like the information retrieval, like site information you mentioned about. So we will do that in the future work.
So in this work, what are some of the big challenges that you had to overcome in this paper, in this research?
Okay, so can I back up a little bit to talk about the motivation of this work? So that readers will be more clear. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the motivation to all of our work is because although we have enormous amount of online images, from Flickr, Instagram, so all those images, all those videos, we could use it to do some geospatial analysis. But if we want to do a detailed land use classification map, so land use, I mean, is for example, so whether a building is a hospital or whether it's a shopping mall or something. So how do we use the land? So whether it's residential or for office use. So, but overhead images cannot handle such case because overhead images is from above, right? So from above, you can only see a building. So you cannot see inside of the building. So you don't know what's that designed for. So that's what we come up with. So we want to use social multimedia to do this kind of land use classification because social media is captured by phones or by cameras. So they can see inside the building to easily infer what it is of this building, so where it is. But the challenge, the most big challenge of using social media is its uneven spatial distribution. Right? So simply speaking, because most images are coming from the famous landmarks, right? So not the general spatial locations. Like there were tons of people having the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, like Eiffel Tower in Paris. So it's very easy to tell these landmarks from the photographs. But for residential areas or privacy preserved regions, so we don't have enough images. So that's a very serious problem. So if we don't have images, so how can we infer the location and all those land use classification information? So that's the challenge we really face about. So traditional, there are several ways to do that. So one simple way is to interpolate the features. Right? So if we have, for example, we have several images at location A, and we have several images at another location B, and these two locations are close to each other. But between these two locations, there is no images at all. So in this case, we just compute the image features of these all the images at those two locations and interpolate them along this line. But here we made assumption that the assumption is we hope the image features will change smoothly in the spatial domain. But actually, in most cases, it's not the case, right? So if we have several images of like a residential and at location A and a residential and location B. Then if you do the like interpolation thing, so it will interpolate. So between these two locations, all the areas are residential based. But actually, in most cases, then the space in between is like forest or park or just a river or something. So it's like natural things. So the other kind of method is, so we try to use other information like remote sensing images or Google Street Views, because those two information sources are like a dense, so everywhere in the on the Earth. So there is a work from like Professor Nathan Jacobs lab and in ICCV 2017. So they just use Google Street Views to do this kind of things. But we find that so all those techniques are based on image features and are based on the assumption I just said. So the image features change smoothly in the spatial domain, but usually that's not the case. So that's why we do this work. So if we cannot use the image features, why not we just use images? But the images are missing at those locations. So how do we come up with new images? So fortunately, we have GANs. Yeah, so that's the motivation of the work.
You mentioned that early in your research career, you spent some time looking at information theory and the like. And it strikes me in that context that this is a pretty difficult problem and that there's just not enough information in these satellite images to do a very good job coming up with ground level images. How do you get around that?
Yeah, so both like overhead imageries and ground level images has its like advantages and drawbacks. So as I said, so the overhead imageries is very accurate and it is dense in everywhere. So we can totally use this kind of information. But if you want to see inside a building, so overhead images cannot do that. But ground level images, we can see inside a building, but the biggest problem is the uneven distribution. So from the information theory side of point of view, so we should use both information sources to how to combine them in the best way to get the best result. Yeah, this is a good point.
Yeah, maybe to make my question more concrete, it has to do with what you considered your error function to be or something along those lines. I guess the thing that I am trying to articulate here that strikes me as being particularly interesting and challenging here is with a ground level image, you know, beyond just trying to generate like high, you know, whether a particular image looks kind of urban or looks like, you know, greenery or forest or things like that. Uh-huh. You know, there are things that you're trying to generate that aren't at all represented in your input. So for example, your satellite image, you know, has no building facades. But if you're trying to generate imagery around an urban area, those ground level images will have building facades. So it's just kind of making that stuff up. And I'm wondering, does that fact play into kind of how you build out the model and what the loss function is and stuff like that? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. It totally makes sense. Yeah. That's a good point. But actually our work is in the very initial stage. So currently we're just using a very traditional conditional GAN to do that. And the loss function is just like generating realistic looking images. So we're not considering whether there is a discrepancy between the ground level images or overhead images or any other objective function. We're just using conditional GAN without other stuff.
So the loss function, only thinking about realism versus not realism, is that kind of axiomatic for conditional GANs?
Yes, it is. So okay. For most of the conditional GANs, it's just so for the discriminator, its job is just to say so whether this image is fake or real. So it's a binary problem, and the objective function is just that. So entropy loss.
Okay, got it. So you built this GAN-based system to produce these images. We were just talking about loss functions. Like, what did you find in terms of its performance? How did the system do?
Yeah. So in terms of the image quality, so I don't have a monitor to show the quality here, but basically it makes sense. So we can generate some realistic images, ground level images according to the overhead images. But we don't have like a evaluation metric. So how real they are or how accurate they are. So we use another task. So that's a land use classification, right? Because if we can do a better land use classification given these like fake images, so we can create fake images all over the ground, right? So if we can use these images to like do better land use classification, so that both accuracy can be a good indicator of how our model works. So let me like share the performance of our land use classification problem. So if we are using the conditional GAN generated features to do the land use classification, we can achieve like a land cover classification accuracy with like 73% accuracy. So actually it's kind of like it's reasonable. It's not high, but it's reasonable. The problems we're thinking here is because our generated images are not realistic enough. So that's some of our future work. So we have like three future directions to go. So I can talk about later, like if you like want.
In the land use classification, how many classes are there?
It's only binary classification. So like as I mentioned, it's a rural and urban areas. So because that's only the ground truth we have.
Okay, so you've got a bunch of satellite data. You feed it into your conditional GAN. It generates an image that is meant to be representative of a ground level view of the area that you indicate. Mm-hmm. And then you are sending that into a classifier that is meant to determine whether it's urban or rural. And is the 73%, is that the accuracy of your classifier or the accuracy of the generator based on a trained classifier?
Oh, it's the classifier. It's
the classifier. Okay, the classifier itself. That's what I thought you were saying. And so, You know, how did the GAN itself perform relative to with that classifier?
Okay, so the baseline of that is, we compare to like a traditional approaches, right? So the first approaches I'm talking about is interpolated features. So if we have some images, we just do the feature extraction first and interpolate the features on those regions without images. So the baseline is like 65%. Okay, so 65. So if we're using GANs without conditional, like we're getting like a 2 or 3% improvement, like to the almost 68%. And if we're using conditional GAN, we're having like 70%. And if we're using conditional GAN generated features, we're having the best accuracy, like 73%. So that's the progress of our work.
And I just want to make sure I understand this. I thought what you were saying was that the classifier itself, like totally separate from the GAN part of the system, had a 73% accuracy. Did you model the land use classifier separately, and that was 73%?
Yes. So the land use classifier is totally separate from the GAN, right? So the GAN is about generator discriminator. The job is to create these
images. Yeah.
Yes. And then we use the features from the discriminator as the input to the land use classifier. Okay.
Right. I guess what strikes me as odd is that, or at least curious, is that if I understood you correctly, your ultimate accuracy of your GAN turned out to be exactly the same as the accuracy of your classifier, 73%. Oh.
Maybe I'm saying wrong. So because for GAN, there's no like accuracy, right? So GAN for the discriminator is just a real or fake. So we don't care about that accuracy or not. So it's usually very high. So like 80% or 90%, it's very, very high. But what we are care about is the land use classifier. Yeah. So what I'm saying, the accuracy is all for land use classifier. It's not for GAN classifier.
Okay, I think I'm confusing the issue here and not okay. Doing a good job explaining. So I guess I'm thinking that there are, as we established, there are two separate systems. There's the generating system. Mm-hmm. Its input is an overhead image and its output is a ground level image. And there's a classifying system and its input is a ground level image and its output is a land use a binary land use classification.
Yes.
And so the performance of the GAN is a subset of that first system, and it's responsible for generating these images, and it's kind of judged on whether the images are realistic or not. But that whole first system, the generator system as a whole, right, you're giving it a satellite image and it's spitting out a ground level image, we can measure that its accuracy with respect to producing kind of the correct land use, right?
Right, yes.
So that's one kind of accuracy measure. And then there's another, which is given any kind of image, whether it's generated from our generator or not, you know, is this land use classifier model accurate in classifying the input image correctly? And then there's like a third performance metric, which is the end-to-end, right? Given a satellite image, can we identify the land use correctly? And so which of these is the 73%?
It's the second one. So for the third one, we're not doing end-to-end right now. So we're doing two stage. So first stage is GAN, the second stage is land use. We're not doing end-to-end at this point.
Yeah, I guess if you're not doing end-to-end, you're not really looking at the first, the performance of the generator either, because that really is the end-to-end.
Uh-huh.
Okay, got it. Is the main focus of the research around modeling and testing this the classifier then, or is it the generator system?
The classifier, right? Because so for geospatial analysis, we're more caring about the land use system. So basically, it's a zoning system, right? So usually the government and city will make a zoning map, so every year or so. So that is the most helpful thing. So for the generator, it's just a technique we use. So if we don't use GAN, we can use other generator to generate images.
It's kind of funny in that, like, you know, GANs are so popular and quote unquote sexy term. It's almost like a head fake that kind of pulls your attention away from what you're actually trying to do in this paper.
Yeah. Actually, it is. So,
okay. So I'm not sure you've even talked much about the classification model.
So for land use, it's pretty basic, like a convolutional network. So like we use ResNet 101 to do that. So actually, we have like a previous work like 3 years ago. So it's also doing land use classification with like a convolutional neural network. I think at that time, we're the first batch of work that used deep learning for this kind of work. We also received the best poster award in the SAM6 spatial conference. Yeah, so basically, at that time, it's also the similar problems. We're using social media, we use deep learning, we do the land use classification. But the biggest problem is we don't have the ground truth, right? If we don't have ground truth, we cannot evaluate our model. So at that time, we just took a university campus to do the land use classification task. It's a trivial example, it's a toy example, but we get like very good accuracy. So since that time, we start to build a very large data set. And actually, we took like 2 years to build a data set and continue this line of land use classification system. Yeah, but in this work, in this GAN paper, we're just using a very standard ResNet 101 network to do the land use classification.
Does the social media images come into play in this paper?
Oh, yes. So for the ground level images from the GeoGraph dataset, so those are all like the ground level images. So social media, right? Those social media are contributed by just resident in United Kingdom. So anybody can submit an image to the website and the website will show it. So where the photo is taken and what it's about. So yeah, for that dataset, it is totally like social multimedia.
And remind me where that comes into play in the system?
The system is when you do the discriminator, right? You need to tell this image is fake or real, right? But how do you determine whether it's real or fake? You have to look at some ground level images to know it is real or fake, right? Yeah, that's what they come into play. So although the input is overhead imagery, but the ground truth, like something you compare to, is the ground level images. So that's when the social multimedia come into play.
And those images they're not labeled at all with regard to land use or anything like that. It's just, that's the training the discriminator to understand real versus fake images.
Yes. That's the beauty of GAN, right? So we don't care about the labeling. We don't need to know the land use classes. We just need to know this is a real image, that is a fake one. So.
Okay, cool. I think I've got it now. So to sum it all up, right, you've got this challenge of being able to develop accurate land use classifiers, but you've got this problem of sparse data, right? So you've got all of this area that you might want to classify based on satellite images, but that you don't have specific ground level data for. So you generate some realistic looking ground level data using the conditional GAN and then use that to train your classifier. And you've been able to kind of incrementally improve the performance of the classifier using this kind of data as opposed to previous data sources that are trying to approximate this data that you don't have.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Got it.
Exactly.
Got it. Uh-huh. Okay. Awesome. Yeah, I don't know why this one was so difficult for me to wrap my head around, but I think a part of it had to do with this GAN head fake.
Yes. So most of people just focus on the GAN. So, what GAN structure you're using? Are you using the state-of-art GAN? So, yeah. So actually, we're doing something like for geospatial analysis, so for the land use classification. So that's our mm-hmm. final aim.
Awesome. Are there other interesting aspects of this paper that we haven't touched on yet?
Yeah. So for this paper, there's but for the future work, right? I want to talk about the future work a little bit. So that's very interesting. So the first thing about the future work is, so right now our generated ground level images is not real enough. So they lack the image details. So for some like houses or like animals, they don't look real enough. So there is plenty of room for improvement. So currently we're thinking, so we want to use a technique called a progressive GAN. So from NVIDIA. So that method is, the key idea is to grow both the generator and discriminator progressively. So from a small network, from a small resolution, we add new layers to the model and increasingly train the model so in a progressive manner. So this can both speed up the training procedure and stabilize the model, because GAN is really hard to train. So sometimes it's just the model collapse. So this could eventually lead us to a very good image resolution, because currently our generated image is only 32 by 32 or 64 by 64. So it's very coarse. So, but eventually we'll want to have some images 1K by 1K or 2K or even 2K. So, because most of remote sensing imageries is 2K by 3K. So it's very large and it's very detailed. So we want our generated ground level images is also large and detailed. So I think that will bring up our performance by a large margin.
Okay.
So that's the first direction. And the second direction is, so there's also recent work by OpenAI called GLOW. So they're using reversible generative models. They're not using GANs, but reversible generative models. So that model, the good thing about it is their latent space, the features. So the features are useful for downstream tasks, because in GANs, so the data points can usually not be directly represented in a latent space. So because they have no encoder and they don't have all the data distribution. But for reversive generative models, they can interpolate between this feature space. So it's very smooth. So in that case, we can directly use the features. We don't need to use the images. So I hope that can be a better solution. And then I think a lot of people are interested in this paper as well. So the GLOW one. So it can generate mm-hmm. very realistic images. And the third direction will be using more information, as you talk about. So maybe using an information retrieval thing, or using some text information, right? Because for example, so if we want to generate a forest image, so if we just give him the overhead imagery, so maybe he cannot give us a good image. But if we can say, so I want a forest wheel with one house inside it. So maybe in our generated ground level images, we will see exactly one house in a forest scenery. So that's very promising. So that's the third directions to go. So this work, this GAN work, is our initial attempt to do this dense interpolations in this direction. So we have a lot of work coming up. So hopefully we can get better results in the future.
You mentioned with regard to the GLOW paper, I've seen it, but I haven't looked at it in any detail at all. You mentioned that part of what it allows you to do is to get these smooth representations in a feature space.
Yes.
And Would you then be trying to use that feature space, or is the only benefit to you of that that it produces better images?
I think we will try both. So better images and the features. I think maybe the image, maybe the features makes more sense, because for glow work, they're reversible, right? So the reversible means if you have some input and go into the output, it can also use output to get you the input. So the reversible makes the features more robust. So it makes sense. It is explainable. So in that case, the features might be more powerful than the GAN features.
Are the features in this feature space, are they semantically related? Like, is it kind of an embedding in the feature space where you can get these semantic relationships between these different types of generated images?
Yeah, definitely. I think they're, the features should be like semantic related. So if we do like a feature space visualization, we can see like a tree, forest are clustered together, and the river, water, lake, those images are clustered together. So the features are definitely semantic related.
And so do you think you'll get to a point where you can start with a ground truth image of a field and say, like, I want a little bit more, you know, rivers, and then get a stream and a little bit more rivers and get like a bigger body of water or something like that?
Wow, you're really like smart. So that's something we're trying to do right now. So
okay,
that's more like a manipulative of the image, right? So if we can do that, so that's very interesting to the geospatial communities.
Just to kind of wrap things up, I'm curious. You mentioned how difficult training the GANs has been. Can you maybe share with us some things that you've learned as you've tried to work with GANs and conditional GANs?
Okay, sure. So for GANs, so because we're using a very standard conditional GAN, so which is proposed like 2015 or 16, so it's very earlier stage of the GAN. So the training is like unstable, so have a lot of problems. So as mentioning another paper, I forgot the exact name, but it should be like good practices during like training, implementing GANs. So they propose like we should use straight convolution, not pooling, because pooling can hurt the like image resolution thing during the downsampling. And we should like using smaller crop size and a smaller learning rate, something like that. But I don't think that's a major problem right now, because most GAN models is like easier to train at this moment. So because the loss matrix changes to the Wasserstein loss, so that is a very stabilized loss function, and also the network architecture change. So right now we can train very deep networks using GAN. So for example, like a ResNet 101, and the output can be like several hundred resolutions or even 1K resolutions. So the training of the GAN is not that hard right now.
Awesome. Well, Yi, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us what you're working on. It's really interesting stuff.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, everyone, that's our show for today. For more information on Yi or any of the topics covered in this episode, head over to twimlai.com/talk/172. As always, thanks so much for listening, and catch you next time.